There is this thing.
Do you realize
what is? There is this thing.
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing.
On.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Friday edition of CKUT's Community News Program, Off the Hour. Today is January 15th. My name is Sarah Jesmer, and I will be your host today. CKUT broadcasts from the unceded traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg and the Ganigahaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. I'm pre-recording this on Jajage, or so-called Montreal. Stay tuned, we'll be right back with some headlines.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
First, the news. The City of Montreal announced this week that some homeless people will be vaccinated. After talks with Welcome Hall Mission Director Sam Watts, 2,000 people will be vaccinated. Watts says the number of unhoused people looks more like 3,000. And last fall, Mayor Valerie Plante said Montreal's houseless population is somewhere between 3,000 and 6,000 people. There's no definitive timeline as to when these 2,000 vaccinations will take place or how, but public health officials said Wednesday that it should be, quote, this week, end quote. Some people working with unhoused community members say that army reinforcements are needed, but the city says that's not within their jurisdiction to call. Here's Mayor Valerie Plante at that Wednesday press conference.
I'm thinking about the homeless population. Just to give you a state of where we're at, there's 1,366 emergency shelter spaces available, and including drop-in centers, hotels, and shelters. There will be an extra 150 spaces that will be added in the very near future. I want to let everybody know there's also a shuttle since the beginning to help people to have access to a bed. And I also want to reiterate that there is adapted clinical services for homeless people dealing with the COVID at the Royal Victoria Hospital.
Advocates say they want to see the city make sure that no homeless person gets fined by the police for being out past 8 p.m. curfew and who don't want to go to a shelter.
So, of course, having more and more places and shelters is important for that exact reason, but also because we want to make sure people have a warm place to stay. But also, I want to reiterate that the police officers are well aware of the complexity of what it means to be in the streets. And so, though there's a curfew, they are using their judgment to make sure that they accompany people to shelters, because we do think that prosecuting is not the most effective way to support people in a vulnerable situation. Though, it's not a black and white situation. It's quite complex, and there might be cases where the police officers have to intervene.
Plante spoke alongside Regional Director of Public Health, Dr. Mylene Duwain.
I would like to say a specific words for the homeless situation where we have 8 active outbreaks. We have had more than 172 new cases linked to those the homeless situation since the beginning of December. So we are now, as we call an enquête épidémiologique, an epidemiological investigation, and we have a specific plan where we're going to screen some of the community organization working with homeless population.
The director again.
Our positivity rate is at 12%, so it is important, even though it has decreased in the last week in many neighborhoods. The main neighborhoods or hotspots are still Parc Extension, Saint-Léonard, Saint-Michel, Saint-Laurent, and Bordeaux-Cartierville.
Montreal announced all residents and staff at CHSLDs or long-term care facilities have now been given the first of two doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. A small number of facility residents have tested positive for COVID after getting their first dose, like at Maimonides Geriatric Center in Côte-Saint-Luc. The Family Advocacy Committee represents people with loved ones at Maimonides, and they filed legal action with the hopes of encouraging Quebec to administer the second booster shot quicker. And it's almost 1 year since blockade started across the country in support of the anti-pipeline land defense in British Columbia. The Wet'suwet'en Nation stirred solidarity measures from coast to coast last spring by their opposition to the Coastal GasLink pipeline project and their push for the recognition of their traditional legal system. COVID-19 has caused the legal proceedings about this pipeline to significantly slow, while pipeline preparation work continues on the nation's unceded land. Supporters with advocacy group North Shore gave an update this week on charges against land offenders since these blockades. They say that 60 people are still facing criminal charges. And the City of Montreal has hired an anti-racism commissioner, the first in its history. The job was created following public consultations on racism last summer. Commissioner Boshra Manai says she'll focus first on municipal hiring and addressing racial profiling within police forces. The office of Quebec's premier, François Legault, says that this appointment was a, quote, mistake, end quote, because of Manet's past advocacy work. Her position announcement comes during the same week that a synagogue was vandalized in Westmount. Someone has since been arrested in connection with that incident a few days ago. And in news that you can use, there's a protest happening this weekend against the provincial lockdown. It's the second about this subject in 1 week. It's run by local aid groups who say that the province-wide curfew hurts more than it helps the most marginalized communities, like immigrants, sex workers, and the people experiencing domestic violence. That's Saturday tomorrow at Place Valois at 3:30. And if you are hearing this, we want you to call us. We're looking to hear from Montrealers about how they're doing in confinement as the curfew and cold keep even more of us indoors for longer. What are you doing to stay positive? How are you doing? Do you have a pandemic project that you're proud of? And do you have a question that we can answer for you, like, is the Montreal Botanical Garden still open during these days? Answer, they are, and you don't need a reservation to visit for free. Call us and leave a voicemail under 3 minutes. We'll play some of them out on air. That number is 514-448-4041, extension 7000. Again, 514-448-4041, extension 7000.
And you're listening to CKUT.
You're listening to CKUT and...
Thanks for listening to CKUT.
That's a beat called Action Owl by Montreal-based producer Jamvis. For the rest of this hour, we're going to listen to some of an episode from the Red Nation podcast. It's about how last week's riot at the Capitol building of the United States intersects with colonialism. You can find this Capitol Hill Edition podcast at theRedNation.org. See you at the top of the hour.
In the fight against COVID-19, we must all continue to respect public health guidelines and follow self-isolation instructions. Self-isolate if you have symptoms. Self-isolate after testing. Self-isolate if the test is positive. Self-isolate when you return from a trip. And self-isolate when you've been in contact with someone who's tested positive. Self-isolation is important. Please, take it seriously. Learn more at quebec.ca/self-isolating. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
This is the Red Nation podcast with your host, Nick Estes. And we have some amazing news to announce for the year 2021. Red Nation podcast has been, you know, variously co-hosted or guest hosted by Red Nation comrades. But this year we're actually inviting our comrade Jen Marley onto the show as a permanent co-host.
Woo-hoo.
So Yay. She's joining us today in this roundtable discussion on the Q Shaman, and it's all dedicated to the Q Shaman.
Q Savage.
Yeah, Q Savage.
Q Savage.
Q the Savage, the Dior Savage commercial.
Lawrence of QAnonia.
Yeah, QAnonia.
Lawrence of QAnonia. Oh, shit.
Dances with Qs. All right. Jen Marley, who are you? Where do you come from?
Why are you here?
And why are you here?
Show us your papers.
Yeah, show us your papers. Storm in the podcast, like.
Wait, did you introduce me?
Oh, yeah. Cena's on here, too.
God, rude.
Why is this guy here?
Who the fuck is me? Okay, I'll tell you.
Yeah, wait your turn. Wait your turn.
Lord. Okay. First of all, I just missed this guy's story.
The floor is yours, dog.
This is good.
2021 is off to a bad start.
Okay, yeah. I'm Jen Marley. I'm from the Pueblo of San Ildefonso. I'm Tewa. My grandma's from Zia Pueblo, so I also got my roots there, too. I am a student. I'm in the PhD program at the University of New Mexico in the American Studies Department. Nick just so happens to be my advisor. And
nepotism.
Yeah. I don't think that counts as not related. It's weird.
It's not nepotism. You're not related by blood. Just kidding. No.
Yeah.
I
think it's called favoritism. Probably gonna get fired for that.
Oh no.
What do you study, Jen? Want to tell us a little bit about your dissertation, your work?
Well, I'm far from my dissertation, but my research interests include like queer indigenous studies, indigenous feminisms, third world feminisms, internationalism, you know, environmental studies. And I'm especially interested in looking at gender. I consider myself as belonging to the traditions of indigenous feminism. I'm a co-founder of the Pueblo Feminist Caucus of the Red Nation. I feel that this, you know, my project like definitely transcends the academy, and I'm interested in rethinking kinship and identity within Pueblo communities and beyond. And I'm also just, you know, interested in looking at our relationships to the state and how identity has formed historically in the place that I'm from, but also looking at how we can learn to be internationalists as, you know, we have been historically, and what possibilities exist for our liberation alongside, you know, engaging in broader anti-imperialist struggles. So it's not very precise yet. I'm still working on narrowing down exactly what I want to look at. But yeah, I hope I can contribute like useful theoretical frameworks to the realm of indigenous feminism, but also like I'm really just interested in like throwing down like in revolution, like dismantling nuclear colonialism and, you know, laying some kind of foundation for people to do that very real hardcore work someday. So, yup.
Sweet.
People probably know me or have seen me. People are probably most familiar with my my engagement in the
your arrest.
My arrest. I know. People just
when you
love
stormed
sharing
the New Mexico State Capitol.
Right. Palace of the Governors.
Yeah.
Yeah, people just love sharing like my arrest pics, and I'm like, if you're gonna share my arrest pics, you gotta share my nudes too. You gotta balance it out.
So that's a good segue into today's conversation. I was actually thinking about this because I was like, I didn't want to bring it up, but you brought it up, Jen.
There's no way around it, man. Yeah. I try.
So for example, like we're going to be talking about the QAnon, Q Shaman specifically, Mr. Jake Angeli. I think that's how you say his name.
Who cares?
Who cares? But.
Okay, and as well as in the banking cartels. So all over the globe, countries are occupied by central banking institutions that loan the government money at interest, and this enables them to own all the other socioeconomic and geopolitical gears in the country. Okay, and then what they do is they use their billions or trillions of dollars to create a bunch of deep underground bases where they have all this like highly top secret technology going on. Okay. And they are like figuring out how to do things like create infinite energy or do things like anti-gravity technology or inertia propulsion. They're learning how to do things like cloning and all sorts of crazy stuff, okay? This is like a global takeover. They're trying to create a new world order, right? They're trying to create a one world government. That means there's like over 180 countries involved in all this stuff where they're monopolizing all the resources, all the labor in the country through the central banking system, okay? And that enslaves the whole country through debt to whoever owns a central bank, all right? Now,
this is in response to the storming of the Capitol by the Q people. They called it, I think it was called like the Great Awakening or part of the Great Awakening, to rescue Donald Trump from, you know, not getting his second inauguration or his second term as president of the United States. But what was fascinating about that, and I think a lot of indigenous people on Twitter and elsewhere noticed, that the police very gingerly either aided and abetted the QAnon MAGA people or, didn't do what they do to us as indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, you know, here locally in, you know, New Mexico, there's a very militant and homicidal militia movement, very much aligned with the fascist right that took power or that attempted to sort of symbolically take power in the state.
They smeared shit on the walls.
Yeah.
It's a type of power.
Yeah.
I guess they pissed on the Senate floor too.
Did they really?
Yeah. Yep. Talk about sauvage.
Good old shit and piss.
Fucking savages.
But the, what's great, I mean, what's interesting here is that you had videos of these militia guys in Santa Fe, which is the state capital of New Mexico. It's also where the churches used to hang and fly on their flagpoles, Pueblo and Apache scalps. It's also where a lot of Pueblo and Apache people were sold into slavery. It's also, you know, just where the gallows were when they used to execute indigenous people. And so this is the state capital of New Mexico. It's also where on January 6th, the, you know, Cowboys for Trump and the militia movements went to the governor's mansion and actually openly threatened with guns and said they were going to kill Michelle Lujan Grissom. And nobody was arrested at all. And you were arrested for simply protesting a genocide parade.
That is correct.
In Santa Fe. So maybe you can talk. We'll start local and then we'll go global. Maybe you can walk us through Santa Fe and the genocide parade that occurred there and like everything that's, you know, like the significance of armed white guys going to the Capitol and demanding, you know, a recount.
Sure. Santa Fe, God, gotta kill it with fire. Irredeemable, in my opinion.
For sure.
It's just like from its very inception has always been about like the reinforcement of like just violent settler colonialism and the perpetuation of racial capitalism. Today it's like New Mexico's art mecca, and you know, the celebrities have homes there. It's known for its you know, famous art scene, and it's a place. It's particularly the Santa Fe Plaza, like where the roundhouse is, where the Palace of the Governors is, and you know, all of the galleries are. It's just a site of like very just gruesome violence, as Nick mentioned, you know, the sight of hangings, the sight of battles. And I also want to mention, though, like, Santa Fe, when I'm talking about Santa Fe, I'm talking about the settlement. What that place is called in the Tewa language historically is Ogapo Geowinge, meaning the White Shell Water Place, in reference to a hot spring shrine that existed where this gigantic cathedral now sits, a very standard of, you know, Spanish colonizers to build churches atop sacred sites. So Santa Fe, like, is a white supremacist settlement to its core. And I'm honestly not surprised at what we saw at the Capitol the other day. I think particularly in the past few years, we've seen Santa Fe show its ugly face for what it is. It's often, like, celebrated as being so liberal and, like, gay friendly and, like, ecologically friendly, and, you know, a lot of new agers and go there and live there. So it has, like, you know, big granola vibes. But of course, we all know what usually lies under that mask. So I think that storming and the lack of police response to it is something that doesn't surprise me. It's, like, very on brand for Santa Fe. Yeah, I mean, just a few months ago, you know, Native women were brutalized when during and after the toppling of the racist obelisk monument, which is actually a monument like celebrating Union soldiers occupying the area, and it's known for its inscription saying that the monument is to honor those killed by you know, the Indian savages. And there's a whole history to that, but it's a monument that's been contested quite a bit throughout history, just like the Entrada, right? The genocide parade that I was arrested for protesting. That's been being protested since at least 1980, possibly even before that. But yeah, basically what it is similar to Civil War reenactments. It reenacts the reconquest of Santa Fe by Don Diego de Vargas, a brutal conquistador. It's said to have been a bloodless reconquest, which is a lie. At least 80 Pueblo revolutionaries were hung at the gallows. That was precisely in the spot where I was arrested and paraded. And, you know, to this day, these cops continue to wear the seal of de Vargas on their uniforms. Like, there's just these, you know, this very blatant connection to this ongoing legacy of just violent genociding of Native people there. And so it was abolished only after the optics of my arrest, because that, you know, that, like, struck a chord with a lot of people, and especially, like, these white liberals who want to believe that Santa Fe is, like, their pure progressive wonderland, which since then there's been, you know, multiple indigenous people brutalized and like publicly. And so Santa Fe, kill it with fire. It's not redeemable. Like, just, and people don't think of a place like Santa Fe as being, like, a violent border town, but it really is. You know, like I said, indigenous people aren't even allowed to exist in a place like the Plaza unless they're there selling their wares with permits and, you know, there to, like, upkeep, you know, this illusion that, like, you know, we're these peaceful artisans, like, there for your pleasure. So, I mean, I could go on and on about this. I don't want to take up too much time, but Santa Fe's white supremacist to its core, and it's really scary because I actually think the right has a foothold there right now. I think that in a place like Santa Fe, it's just, like, a perfect place for, you know, these far-right movements to flourish, and I don't know. We'll see what the future holds. I think that's a good segue. Oh, and then I guess a segue to talking about the fucking QAnon shaman dude is, like, Santa Fe historically has been, like, the space where, you know, like I said, the New Age movement has thrived, and, like, these ultra conservative and usually very rich white people will go to not only consume Indigenous art and culture, but to take it up themselves in various ways. It's home to notoriously violent, like, grave robbers and art collectors who, you know, are kind of seeking that to distance themselves from whiteness, but also maintain all of the power that comes with it. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Q Shaman himself has connects to a lot of these busters in Santa Fe.
Q Shaman? Shaman? I don't know. How do you even say that?
Oh.
Is it Shaman?
Again, who cares?
Yeah. Well, all right.
Let's pronounce it several different ways.
So let's talk about the new interim president of the United the new interim president of the Confederate States of America. His name is Jake Angeli. I don't know. I think the Lima Group recognized him and NATO recognized him as the interim president.
It's part of like the separatist movement.
Yeah. But yeah, let's get into this because let's start with this guy because this guy is like now like meme gold for Indian country or Indian Twitter. So his name is Jake Angeli. There was a lot of questions about whether or not he was actually impersonating an Indigenous person.
Of course he was. Mm-hmm. People thought he was impersonating Vikings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that kind of like pure white blood pedigree. And I'm like, nah, dog, he was dressed up like an Indian.
Yeah, he looks like one of the Indians from like a George Catlin, you know, painting. But also he's got like, let's just do a breakdown for those who may not have seen him and may not know who we're talking about. But it looks like he killed, he found a dog that was hit by a car and skinned it and then put it on his head.
Put some horns on it.
And put some horns on it, you know, put a bird on it. And then he's got like a beard, definitely a white guy. He's got like a
Star Wars tattoo.
Is that
a Star Wars tattoo?
Is that a Star Wars tattoo? That's not a Star Wars tattoo.
Okay, like so,
So let me get into it because this is the thing.
He has several tats.
Yeah, he's like a neo-paganist, but it's like related to this whole like white supremacist thing. So I'm going from the top down. So.
Okay, we started at his head.
Yeah, we started at his head.
Dead dog,
horns. He's literally a white devil. he's got an earring. He's got like a, you know, you see a lot of, this is like a thing with a lot of white women. He's got like a beaded long like feathery earring hanging off his right ear. He's got some kind of I don't know, something you buy at Hot Topic, I think. It's like a medallion. It must be like a spell medallion or something. And then he's got a very hairy chest, so he's half bear. He probably smells like one too. No offense to our bear relatives.
I'd like to stand a point of odor on that one, or because that is not a hairy chest. You have never met an Iranian man, clearly. This is a white guy with some peach fuzz on his chest, but
compared to native, he's like a fucking full-blown
woolly mammoth. Natives don't have body hair? I didn't know this.
It's like a whole thing.
Really?
No, like native men can't even grow beards correctly.
God, it's
like
God bless you people.
Yeah, not
even with my amount of white blood, I can't like.
Yeah, no, excessive hair is not a problem.
Hair on your head.
Oh, how did that happen?
I'm white enough to grow a beard.
Yeah, but you'll never find like a native man with back hair or like excessive nipple hair.
Oh, yeah, it hurts so much. Oh.
It's a thing. I mean, like,
or like that their forearms look like fucking.
Oh,
I don't
man.
Know.
I feel seen. Was...
Like kittens.
Yeah. I mean, there is definitely hair. There's hair, but it's not like extensive. It's like
it's like patchy and sporadic in a very strange way, but it doesn't cover like large amounts of like body.
Yeah, there's not a lot of length. Surface area to it.
Surface, that's the word.
The catfish mustache.
What?
Catfish mustache.
I actually really like Navajo men really like the catfish mustache, and I actually really don't like it.
Yeah.
I find it very creepy. It.
They're so proud of their little sparse mustaches.
So I tried to grow like actual facial hair, and I actually got disgusted with myself, and I just shaved because it's like it's so embarrassing.
Yeah, you don't want to look at it. It's
So embarrassing.
Wait, back to Mr. Jake, because this guy is 30, this guy is 33 years old.
Oh yeah, he's an adult.
he's a baby. Like he's like a he's like a little older graduate student. Like he's not, this guy is like their shaman.
Well, yeah, okay, let's get into this.
He's because, his own shaman.
First of all, he's got like a let's finish.
Keep talking about what he was wearing.
I know, yeah, we're only at his
we're only at his nipples. All right.
We're only at his nipples.
We stopped at his nipples and the hair.
I was trying to move us past this.
So it's funny cuz he's got tattoos and we'll get into those tattoos in a bit. But he's got like a tattoo that's literally like constructed around his nipple.
Ouch.
It's not a Star Wars sign. It looks like a rebel sign, but it's not. It's like some kind of weird Nordic thing, and I'll talk about it in a bit. And then further down, he's got like a Thor hammer, and then or a hammer of Odin. And then he's got like he's wearing like I think he probably just went to like Walmart and bought like a Native American Halloween costume. And
no,
just
it looks like he made those fucking pants.
Okay, they got fringe on them.
They don't even have like a waist, do they? Is there like?
I think there's like they're elastic.
Oh shit!
So there's some.
Let me pull up this picture.
Yeah, there's some craft behind it.
Okay.
Definitely not indigenous, because I think the indigenous seamstresses and seamsters that I know would die if they saw that kind of craft.
Yeah, that would never fucking happen. Oh, here's a good
but
picture.
Somebody had a really good description of it. They called it a Chewbacca bikini.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was Star Wars related.
Well, it's, okay, so like, let's get into this. He's not like obvious. People were saying he's an anti-fascist. He's not. He's from Arizona, the good state of Arizona.
He had a spear too.
Well, I'd rather be dead in California than alive in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's pretty much the breeding ground these days.
I mean, it was like the birthplace of neoliberalism. Actually,
yeah, he's probably a direct product of Barry Goldwater, mm-hmm. who actually also used to dress up like an Indian back in the day. As a matter of fact, Playing Indian by Philip DeLoria talks about it.
We will talk more about that on another episode of Yoded.
Yeah, we're going to get into secret societies and Native appropriation.
Well,
stay tuned.
I want to be a part of that. I have a freaking story. I have a firsthand account about that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Santa Fe has a lot of those.
Yep. I actually stayed in one. We used to live in one, actually.
The School for Advanced Research in Santa Fe. Those white sisters. Their last name was White, and they were white.
Yeah, and they used to do mock Pueblo rituals.
Yeah, like Aztec rituals.
Oh. Yeah, they used to dress up like Indians.
They used to dance around
circles.
And
this is what the messed up thing about it was, is that, you know, it's like this prestigious institution. And, you know, a lot of these people like are indigenous academics, but they just left those pictures out. They're just like, oh, it's cool. It's part of our history. Like, look at all these white people who used to play Indian and dance like Indians when dancing was actually illegal for us, you know. It was pretty
well. It's the history of American anthropology.
And they also had a pet cemetery there, which is really disturbing.
My grandma and grandpa went to one of those things out of curiosity, and they loved to talk about it at cocktail parties, or they used to, and they just got the biggest fucking kick out of seeing that foolery like firsthand.
That's the way I feel like about 99.9% of indigenous appropriation. It's freaking hilarious. Am I offended? Yeah, but I think it's better to laugh at it. And this is a perfect guy. So he's got tattoos. He's got Thor's hammer, or Mjolnir, whatever. I don't know. I'm going to purposely butcher these European things. And an image of Yggdrasil, a tree of life, etched around his nipple. And
that is a tree of life.
Mm-hmm. And then right a place right above his art is the Valknut. Mm-hmm. Real name, the knot of the sling. There's actually a nut story in here too, so
yep,
stay tuned. We're putting Easter eggs,
death by nuts.
Yes. So, okay. We'll get into that. There was a casualty that involved getting electrocuted in the nuts at the Capitol building. It's a true story. So these, the Valknut is an Old Norse runic symbol, and it's very much popularized by white supremacists, you know. And so for those of you that don't know, like, they're like, back in the 90s, but also kind of like in the 80s as well. In the 90s specifically, white supremacists in Europe, especially like in the Nordic countries like Sweden and Norway, began to reappropriate what would be considered pagan culture. And it was really much integrated into like the black metal scene. And so you get like these black metal, like black metal actually comes out of a form of Nazism and fascism. And they were like burning down churches because they saw like the Christians as like, you know, foreign invaders, et cetera. And that kind of culture has really permeated white supremacist culture in the United States and North America. And so that's where these symbols actually come from. He's, you know, he is appropriating a kind of form of like what would be considered like European primitivism, right? And the argument with them is that Europe is like, you know, there is a European nationality or European nationalities, and that Europeanness actually goes back to what we now know as paganism. And so, and they think of the North America as an extension of Europe in this sense, right? While also appropriating indigenous kind of iconography and imagery as well.
So it's like a double play on the nativism.
Yeah.
It's really inherent to settler identity.
Yeah. And there's something like to be said about the way that the left and like right-wing media pundits talk about like quote unquote tribalism, because this country was actually built to eradicate our tribalism, like fundamentally to be kind of like have this like modern figure of like this kind of amalgamation of primitivity, right? Whether it's through the formation of like male masculine violence through fascist organizations like the Proud Boys or fucking Q Shaman. he's the apotheosis of Western culture.
Oh yeah.
You gotta love it.
They don't send their best. They send this guy.
Yes. He is their best.
So that's Q Shaman. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts on this, because I think it's amazing that this guy's the leader. Like he's been like, even if he's not really the leader, he's the figurehead of the MAGA takeover.
It's just literally so on brand. Like it couldn't be more on brand. Like, I was pretty yoded because I had just finished reading Playing Indian to write a final paper. And I'm like, damn, these guys are really with it. What it tells me is that they know their history, right? They know what it means to play Indian, you know, as a part of like engaging in these like white supremacist, like patriotic movements. So why are we confused about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe I just thought about this, but I remember there's this like a prominent voice. Her name is Lila June Johnson. The white liberals really like her politics. She's a Navajo person, kind of in the radical politics kind of arena. But I remember this piece she wrote a few years ago about how white settlers need to find their own indigeneity, and that's like a really important political project for them. And so they actually need to like go back to Europe and like do what this guy, what's his name again?
It doesn't matter. It's Q.
Oh, Q Shaman.
It's Q Savage.
Q Savage. To do what this guy has actually done. And I was thinking, I was like, dude, like if this is your recommendation for like what white settlers should do, like they accomplished it. This is the dream, yeah. Right? This is the dream right here of finding one's like white indigeneity. Because as Nick said, it's like, it's an indigeneity that extends back. It's like a fictional indigeneity, right? That draws from like European primitivism and then also like American or like a quote unquote new world kind of primitivism. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that people have written about, you know, the way that playing Indian, of course, Phil DeLoria's book is foundational for this, that playing Indian is like a foundational aspect of the American experience. It's like settlers, it's particularly white settler men, form kinship with each other through playing Indian. And this is like well documented. It still happens in places like Santa Fe. Boy Scout culture. So what we saw on Wednesday in this Q Savage dude, like being like the literally like the icon, right? The icon of this particular watershed historic moment in this fascist movement. Like the fact that this dude is in red face is like, this is America. Like if you want to understand settler colonialism, you literally just have to look at this guy. It's not an aberration that he's wearing this outfit and that he is playing Indian. This is literally like the culmination of white supremacy, which is largely based on anti-Indianism. So Yeah, not shocking at all.
So they somebody actually did his ancestry, and he apparently did a DNA test, and it came back. It came back that he's related to Elizabeth Warren.
I was waiting. I was like, what's he going to say? This isn't real. This is totally a setup. I've listened to enough hours of this guy's voice to know how he jokes. It's also think of the perversity of all this. Remember, like, okay, so white settlers inherited and this incredible kind of almost sort of historical genetic like genome of the U.S. in the terms of like the nation state of the U.S., which is white supremacy, imperialism, eradicating the indigenous people, right? Like, these are foundational things of U.S. culture, right? But then the problem is, like, the nationalism requires a kind of rootedness. But when you know that you only showed up here like 300 years ago, and then you look around to, like, you know, the other fascists in the room, they're like, oh, Germans have 2,000 years of history. They can talk about that. But like, so then they have to do this thing of, well, we are something called European. And like, the whole idea of Europe then itself becomes this new fiction, right? So they went from, it's like they're riding two sort of invisible imaginative horses at once. One is called like the American National Project, and the other one is something like even phonier called Europe. Right? Like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, if you look at the map, there's only like one, there's like three, like, there's only like that many continents. Like, we think of Europe, Asia, Africa, like, as separate continents, but like, these are, like, this is a huge landmass, and our borders that we drive or that we draw around them, those are mental borders always, right? Like, those are, like, sure, there are real peoples of, say, Ukraine and Germany and whatever. Like, there are cultures and languages and foods and whatever. But like, the idea of Europeanness is incredibly new, incredibly shaky. And who believes in Europe? Fucking crazies like Lauren Southern who go out into the middle of Mediterranean to harass, like, you know, undocumented people out of like fleeing their land. Like, these are the degenerates of Europe. The rest of them, like nobody believes in Europe as a project. The UK just left Europe. Like, they wanted to be part of the club they helped found. Like, what does that, like, where do we stand? But that kind of critical faculty, I mean, it escapes these people. What these people have is this kind of revanchist, like dream of returning to this, you know, like, totally fictional image of America as this perfect sort of whole place. And this, you know, demonic, illiterate bag of McDonald's grease embodies that for them, right? And the fact that he lost means they all lost. So, of course, he couldn't have lost. Therefore, you have to go and fight this sort of fictional thing. And then it turns into this, like, and then the cops let you into the Capitol building. I mean, like, this is the perfect end to the Trump thing.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. I was in America when he was elected. I watched the election with almost like kind of glee, because when it happened, I felt this smug sense of good. Let them see what they are. Let them learn what like I know what the United States is, what a lot of the rest of the earth knows what the United States is. So like, in a weird way, the strange devotion of this like just toilet brain soul with like nothing to offer. Like, this is actually like what you said, Melanie, is right. Like, this is America.
This is America.
Like, ironically, they actually are the red, white, and blue. Like,
his face is painted. His red, white, and blue war paint on his face.
Like, in a bad way, like, they showed themselves for what they are. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, this is all that you have. Like, some clown prince screaming on Twitter, and then, you know, I mean, what we didn't talk about is the fact that right afterwards, he threw them all under a bus. He hasn't been heard from since. Anyways, that's my rant. I'm going to stop. That was way too long.
So this man was arrested just hours ago, what I'm reading.
Yeah, today. We're recording on Saturday.
Did he have a shirt on?
Yeah, did he have his... That's the good question. That's the number one question.
Yeah. In Sedona.
Yeah, he was in Sedona.
He was in one of those sweats where a bunch of like white folks die. Yeah. He was in a construction.
No, but I think that there, I think like what you're onto something, Sina, and this is something that I wanted to get into as well, is because there's been a lot of chit chat about this. But he represents, and this like return to primitivity or primitivism, like whether it's like an imagined Europe or an imagined, you know, America, is like the quintessential move to settler innocence, right? To create like all, like even like, you know, immediately after this whole incident happened, you had Mark Wayne Mullen, who's actually a Cherokee congressperson. I just tweeted out what he said, and I got a lot of backlash from Cherokee people, and rightfully so, because they're like, we don't own him. He's like, you know, he's a piece of shit. He's a racist asshole. And he is. But he is one of six, and there are three conservatives. Like, this is the thing. Oh, yeah, representation of indigenous people. Three of them are right-wingers who were on board with the Stop the Steal campaign. Like, let's be honest, that is what, you know, representation does not mean red power. Representation does not mean indigenous power. But anyways, he was, you know, there's a picture of him, and he said that, you know, he did this interview with NBC, and he said that, you know, oh, I'm a, you know, I remembered my training. I think he was, you know, he served in the military, and he was like, I was making sure everybody was out, you know, out of the floor. And then they flashed a picture of him, and he was like literally cowering behind a chair the entire time. But anyways, he said, you know, the interviewer asked them, you know, point blank, and this is on live television, she's like, you know, Trump just got on television and said, and you know, with a pre-recorded message, and said to all these people, I love you, you know, but please stop and go home. I don't think Trump actually threw them under the bus, but Mark
later
Wayne Mullen,
he did, though, in his tweet he did, oh, in his, yeah, his begging to keep his account, which didn't even work.
His last tweet. The series finale of Trump Twitter.
Mark Wayne Mullen, an indigenous person, ostensibly, you know, said, I love these guys too. Didn't qualify it by anything. You know, this is the Blue Lives Matter people that ended up killing a cop with a fire extinguisher. Yeah, this guy got hit in the head with a fire extinguisher and died. There was Ashley Bitten.
Biggins. Baggins.
of which shire we don't know.
Fucking demon shire of hell.
I have the whole list of the people who died.
I don't have like the good use of adjectives the way that the English lit guy does.
The comp lit guy on the call. Yeah, I know, he's like the toilet bowl of American ideology or whatever.
It was so much better.
So there's Ashley Babbitt, who was a small business owner, by the way. She sold, pool supplies, cleaning supplies out. And she was also a veteran, but also a wild Q follower. There was Benjamin Phillips, upper middle class computer programmer. And I don't really know. He had a stroke and died, I guess. Then there's Kevin Grissom, this is the best one. Apparently, allegedly, according to sources familiar with his death.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. He was a 55-year-old man from Athens, Alabama, and he died of an apparent heart attack. And they say at an unknown point during the events, but according to eyewitnesses who posted on Twitter, apparently he had stolen something, a picture from the wall, and somehow in the course of like bumbling around, he's a large man. Of course, bumbling around, I'm sure he had a hard time grabbing this picture. It slipped and triggered the taser that he had on his Batman utility belt or in his pocket. Not quite sure which one that is. You know, he seems like a very tactically minded person, judging by the pictures of him holding machine guns and with the American flags.
It's just like double fisting machine guns.
Yeah, he's double fisting machine guns in front of a Christmas tree in one of the photos. Suffered from high blood pressure, by the way. So he's probably really worked up at this moment in time. And
then he tased himself.
He tased himself in the balls, in the crotch. Balls. And caused himself to have a heart attack and died. He literally electrocuted his goblin coin purse, to use the language of a complet scholar, and died death by goblin coin purse.
I mean, he must have been tasing himself for a pretty extended period of time to go into cardiac arrest.
Pretty rowdy.
These people are like not well to begin with generally, right? Like this is not the healthiest of countries, like the US. So like, I mean, like think about it, like all these unhealthy people flying across the country, including the Babbitt. I mean, Babbitt looked quasi healthy, so she wasn't one of them, but I mean, she was in the military, that tells you. But the like Babbitt. That like flying across the country, endangering yourself with this like terrible disease, endangering everyone around you. God knows how many people are going to get COVID and die from that event.
Right.
And then to go there and that's how your life ends. Like that's
America.
This
is America. But
it wasn't even like that they met resistance. Like they were allowed into that place. Like they didn't have to face any resistance. So like, yeah. In a way I feel sorry for the Babbitt woman. Because it was all choreographed until they got like how far. What difference has it made if she went through another door? You know what I mean? Like, and she died. Like, she got a bullet through the neck and she died. That's imagine you're her parents or something. Like, what did your child die for? You're like, oh, for like
QAnon
Twitter guy? Like,
yeah.
That is like a deep tragedy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. as sick and depraved as these people are, and like, as much as we're laughing, but like some people give up their lives on purpose to like achieve something, you know, like it's not like, I mean, remember the thing that Bill Maher, the one honest thing that Bill Maher said in his whole life was defending the idea that you shouldn't call the Al-Qaeda like 9/11 guys cowards because they gave up themselves. Like they gave up their lives for what they believed in. We're the cowards. We're the ones who bomb from above. He said this. And then of course it was a huge pushback and it's been conveniently forgotten. And he's back to being the Islamophobe we all know him to be. But like the idea that like the people who die for their cause, like this is in some cultures, in some places, like, you know, this is something highly valued, but there has to be a reason. Like there has to be a good reason. Something good has to come of it. You know?
Yeah.
It wasn't just like a temper tantrum caused by Twitter that then like caused on Twitter about some stupid guy's Twitter account. This is the tragedy. Like this is what you gave up your life for? Like you could have cleaned pools. You could have, you know, like you could have like made your life have meaning of some kind. But that's the thing, when you don't have any politics in your life, when all you have is culture war, and then the hero of that culture war faces some kind of turmoil or sends out, you go to him, like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh my God, like, this is what you died for? Like, for a guy who laughs at you? Like, he hates his followers. He hates them. I mean, the funny thing about him saying, I love you, like, he does not say that to his kids. That motherfucker does not say that to his kids, and they all vie for his love. Maybe he says it to Ivanka, but for all the wrong reasons. But ew. He literally does not say, I love you. And like, there he is telling these other people who probably didn't get told, I probably didn't get told as well enough times that somebody loved them. Or like, you know what I mean? Like that is like this weird, strange thing at the heart of all of this. Like people doing these drastic things for absolutely no reason. And on top of that, for a guy who hates them, that's the turning point here. I don't think the actual events, like the actual sort of like, the symbolism of all these idiots walking into the Capitol building, because that will just like never happen again, right? This will be their excuse that to have 50,000 troops stationed at every single Capitol event, probably daily, is probably going to do what like the French government did with like the Eiffel Tower and just have like a permanent military presence there. It's surprising that that's not the case, right? So like the actual historicity of this is to me not that interesting, but the fact that like, this person died. Like, five people died. Like, I shouldn't laugh, but, like, just saying it out loud is, like, five people died for this, for, like, what is essentially, like, this, the, like, you know, what is essentially is, like, a frat party gone horrible.
I don't know, but
yeah, no, but it was, but they died for fascism, though. They died for like state power. Like they really had a reason. Like, and
they
I don't
would have killed us if we were there. They would have like
they wanted to kill. Wanted to
battle. There was no battle, though. Like there was.
They
nothing,
wanted to kill people
to
in Congress.
Yeah,
well, yeah. I mean,
something that I've been thinking about is like they, with the exception of Ashley Babbitt and the cop that got bashed with the fire extinguisher, they literally killed themselves.
That's true.
They killed themselves. Like that one woman got trampled, like the fucking taser. Like people are falling off of shit and dying of like so-called natural causes, but like they killed themselves. Like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. I think, you know, I get what you're saying, Sina, but like, I guess my perception of it is like, these are like, and I use brainwashed in a way that like, in a way that I understand the implications of this. I'm not using it in a conspiracy minded way, but these people were to the point, somebody like Ashley Babbitt, who knew, I don't know if she ever saw combat in her, I mean, she was in very, I looked at her military records and she was in like, you know, she was in all the places that the United States government was in Afghanistan. She was even in the Persian Gulf for a while. So she knew like the dangers of things. And she knew all of those things, you know, and she like really believed that her, like whatever, in, you know, the ideology was so strong in her, right? The force was so strong in her that yeah. she like took bullets for it. And I would say that like, had she, you know, like being in the streets here during the uprising last summer and seeing the fascists, the people she was rolling with, actually shoot people to try to fucking kill them, I believe that she would have stood by them, because the same people who stood by the fascist who like shot my friend were the same kinds of people like Ashley Babbitt. Mm-hmm. And they actually like would post our home addresses, you know, our pictures on the internet, and like call for our lynching and our hangings, and like basically modern day scalp bounties. Like these people like are out for a murderous, genocidal kind of like program. And I think it's one, you know, and I saw a lot, and this gets into a whole nother thing, but like the element of fascism in this is like, yeah, it was like, and I agree, it was symbolic. There wasn't really anything like, what are they gonna do? I mean, besides
CKUT radio
sound waves in the air.
CKUT
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Welcome back to CKUT. I'm Sarah Jesmer. You are just listening to a January 11th episode of the Red Nation podcast. To hear the rest, or if you want to support that podcast, you can find it on theRedNation.org. That's it for this edition of Off the Hour. If you want to know more about anything that you've heard tonight, or if you want to be a part of the team at CKUT, email us at news@ckut.ca. Again, that's news@ckut.ca. If you want to leave us a voice message about how you're doing, what you're doing in lockdown, call this number, 514-448-4041, extension 7000. Again, that's 514-448-4041, extension 7000. We'd really love to hear from you. You can connect with us on Twitter at CKUT News or on Facebook. Search Off the Hour. Music that you're hearing is from Montreal-based producer Jamvis, J-A-M-V-V-I-S, who just released a new EP in December. Keep it tuned to CKUT for Cafe coming up next.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514.
Ensemble de la nation québécoise, nous devons agir avec force pour freiner la pandémie. Seuls les services essentiels demeurent offerts. Les rassemblements sont interdits. Il est défendu de quitter son domicile entre 20h et 5h le matin. Respectons le confinement et le couvre-feu pour éviter d'être infecté par le virus de la COVID-19. Pour protéger les travailleurs de la santé, nos proches et nos aînés. Car l'important, c'est la santé. Pour plus d'informations, visitez québec.ca/confinement. Un message du gouvernement du Québec. Ce message s'adresse à l'ensemble de la nation québécoise. Nous devons agir avec force pour freiner la pandémie. Seuls les services essentiels demeurent offerts. Les rassemblements sont interdits. Il est défendu de quitter son domicile entre 20h et 5h le matin. Respectons le confinement et le couvre-feu pour éviter d'être infecté par le virus de la COVID-19. Pour protéger les travailleurs de la santé, nos proches et nos aînés. Car l'important, c'est la santé. Pour plus d'informations, visitez québec.ca/confinement. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Bonsoir et bienvenue à Café, votre émission d'art et culture à CKUT 90.3. Ce soir, je vous présente une longue entrevue avec le poète Serge Poulin, accompagné de son fils Félix. Ils vont nous parler de leur beau recueil de poésie « Marche avec le fleuve », dans lequel il est question d'Astroblème, de Goélette et de MacTaggoëc. Suspense! Je vais ensuite vous proposer quelques chansons de 2020 que j'ai pas eu le temps ou pas été en mesure de vous présenter jusqu'à aujourd'hui.